Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscowain. While the phrase, till death do us part, may not apply to all marriages, if you live in New Jersey, it may well apply to the alimony payments after the divorce. New Jersey is among a handful of states where permanent alimony can still be granted regardless of how long the marriage lasted. That means that, in theory, a five-year marriage could generate 50 years of alimony payments, and that is in part why Garden State lawmakers are considering a pair of bills that would eliminate permanent alimony while creating guidelines for how much and how long, among other issues. Massachusetts has already passed such a law, and other states are considering similar legislation. So this hour, we take a look at how alimony works in New Jersey and why some say it's time to rethink it. Our guests are Amy Goldstein. Amy is chair of the Family Law Department at the New Jersey law firm of Capehart Scatcherd. Her work there focuses on marital and civil union dissolution, alimony, child support, and other matters. Amy, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Tracy.
And also joining us is Stuart Kurtz, a member of the core group of New Jersey Alimony Reform. He knows a thing or two about permanent alimony. In fact, he's got some personal experience that he will share with us during the course of our conversation. Stuart, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Tracy.
So, Amy, there are, as I understand it, different types of alimony that are provided for in New Jersey law, but it seems that it's this permanent alimony that has become the sticking point for a lot of people. How does permanent alimony work in the state of New Jersey?
Yeah, Tracy, just to clarify your introduction this morning, you said in the introduction that it's possible that a person could be married for 5 years and have to pay 50 years of alimony. Actually, that's really not possible. I think a large part of the issue here is that there's such a misconception of what is meant by permanent alimony. In New Jersey, permanent alimony is actually quite rare. And there are, I'm not going to say that there are not cases that have permanent alimony. There are such cases. Those cases usually involve long-term marriages with older spouses. So you'll usually find that people who are over the age of 50 and perhaps have been married for 20, 25, or 30 years may have a permanent alimony case. The other thing to keep in mind about permanent alimony that's very interesting is that if you have a person who's 55 and gets divorced after a long-term marriage and is going to pay permanent alimony, they will probably only pay permanent alimony for about 10 or 11 years until their retirement. Mm. So even if you look at the proposed bill that we're going to be talking about later, under their formulas, there are some marriages that are only 15-year marriages or 18-year marriages that pay alimony for 15 years. So you see, it's more complicated than you think because permanent alimony may not be that long after all.
So when does permanent alimony end in theory? Is it at the point of retirement? Is it at the point of death of one or the other spouse? When does it end?
It ends by law on the death of either spouse or the remarriage of the payee. Also, it very often ends at retirement. And the retirement question comes up because the court needs to look at where the parties are situated financially at the time of the retirement. So in other words, when you're ready to retire, and by the way, this is addressed in a lot of agreements that are reached prior to retirement, so you may never end up back in front of a judge. But if your agreement does not address this issue, you may end up back in front of a judge. And the judge is looking at a couple of factors. Importantly, what the judge is looking at is what are the financial circumstances of the parties at the time of the retirement, and is it a good faith retirement? So in other words, I've had clients who want to go to court when they're 61 because they want to retire, and I'll say to them, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to retire and cut your alimony back. You can retire, but you're going to have to continue paying the alimony until a more reasonable retirement age. So, of course, there are cases in which the permanent alimony may continue after retirement. It may be modified after retirement, or in most cases, it's terminated after retirement. So I think that needs to be clarified as well.
Now, Stuart Kurtz, I would think your experience has been a little bit different. You know about permanent alimony. Tell us a little bit about your situation.
Well, I would just like to say that a lot of the things that Amy said, my situation breaks every stereotype that you might hear about. I had a 10-year marriage. Both parties worked throughout the marriage. We both were college graduates. We were just, your average couple who, quote unquote, grew apart. I went to Binghamton, the same university as Amy did. My ex went to Colgate. So we were both very educated people. In terms of the age paradigm, we were both under 40 years old. So we're talking about two people that were under 40 years old that had a 10-year marriage, okay? And now I will have to pay permanent alimony from age 40 for the rest of my life. Just in terms of the, just to address the retirement issue, while yes, it's true that people can retire, the fact of the matter is, as Amy said, they do what they call a test to see if the benefit to the payor exceeds the detriment to the payee. Mm-hmm. And as an accountant, I can tell you that's not as easy to do as you think. But anyway, just getting back to that. So we're both under 40 years old. The judge actually had to impute income to me just to make me pay alimony. We were that close in terms of income. So the judge imputes alimony to me. The judge never explained why she did what she did. And the reason that she didn't have to explain what she did is because she doesn't have to, because New Jersey alimony law presumes that you're going to pay permanent alimony. The judge has to literally do a fact finding. They have to write and document why you will not pay permanent alimony. And in terms of what you said about the 5-year marriage possibly paying alimony, actually, you could. Conceivably, you could. There are, because of the fact that there are no guidelines, you could. Like, for instance, there was a, I know we have people in our organization that had 6-year marriages and ended up paying permanent alimony. There was a case, the goalie for the New Jersey Devils, Martin Brodeur, he had a pretty wild divorce case, and he was married for 7.5 years, and the original judge ordered permanent alimony on that. And he ended up appealing, but because he makes millions of dollars a year, he can appeal. Me being like Joe from Woodbridge, I can't appeal.
Let me stop you right there, Stuart, because I want to ask Amy. I think Stuart raises an important point with his scenario, which is that one of the concerns, as I understand it, about this whole idea of permanent alimony is that the rulings can be, as Stuart pointed out, wildly different from one judge to another, correct?
They can be different from one judge to another, and that's because each case is different from the other. And that's where this concept, this actually misconception has come forward, which is that because every case is different, you can't compare your case to your neighbor or your friend. So Stuart, when he was speaking, something that jumped out to me as an attorney, two things jump out to me as an attorney. My understanding is that Stuart's case actually went to trial. And that it was tried to conclusion. In New Jersey, more than 99% of the cases, of the divorce cases, are settled. So my question is, what was it about Stuart's case in particular that would have led to a trial? And I'm not asking Stuart to answer that question. I'm just pointing out that there are things in Stuart's case that we don't know that must have led the judge to do what she did. Another example is that Stuart mentions that the judge imputed income to him. Now, judges impute income to people when they feel that they are underemployed and that they could be earning more money, but that they are not earning more money. Mm-hmm. So my question, and again, I'm not asking for an answer, I'm just saying that this is the type of factor that until we know all of the facts, we don't know why an outcome was what the outcome was. When you look at the website for the New Jersey Alimony Reform Organization, of which Stuart is a part, they are collecting what they call horror stories. They say this on their website, that they want to collect quote-unquote horror stories. And I went on the website and I looked at the horror stories, and what's interesting about them is no names are given, so that we can't identify who's writing them. And the facts are very vague. So you may get one or two facts about the case from these horror stories, but you don't know the full story. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to get people to understand that my case is different from your case, is different from Stuart's case, and that judges do the right thing by looking at all the different circumstances in each case, and then they come out with different outcomes. People perceive this to be unfair because they aren't paying the same amount of alimony as their friend, but that's because their case has different circumstances than their friend's case.
I'm going to give Stuart an opportunity to respond before we move on to the next question. Stuart?
Well, again, I just want to reiterate that the problem from moment one of this law is that the presumption, the fact that, and I could give you the exact quote on it, is that it's presumed that to avoid the danger of a court awarding alimony for a limited period of time in lieu of permanent alimony, the commission, and I'll get to that later, and the legislature established a statutory safeguard, which I would argue to you has become the law itself and not a safeguard, that mandated specific findings explaining why alimony was not appropriate must be done. This is a tool for lawyers to protect dependent spouses from gender-biased decisions. Hmm. I will tell you right now that I disagree with that premise completely. Getting back to my case, I've no problem talking about it. I'll tell you right now, the judge didn't put one reason in for why she gave me permanent alimony. She didn't have to, because it's presumed she would have to have given a written finding for why she didn't do permanent alimony.
Well, and that's, I wonder about that, Amy, because my sense in preparing for our conversation as I read through some articles was that because every case is different and there are so many factors to consider, that oftentimes judges will default to permanent because it's sort of, it becomes a catch-all. Has that been your experience?
You know, Tracy, I've been practicing law and only family law for 30 years. I have probably had more than 1,000 alimony cases, many of which I've tried and many of which I've settled. And I have to tell you, that is not true. I don't know where that perception comes from. In fact, especially before the recession, the judges were not awarding permanent alimony. That's not meant to mean that it's greater now since the recession, but when people could go out, when a dependent spouse could go out and find a full-time job with benefits pretty easily, or could go to school for a little while and find a full-time job with benefits fairly easily before the recession, it was almost rare to get a permanent alimony order because it was easier for them to find work. So now that we've been through this recession, might there be a few more cases where there's permanent alimony because it's so hard for a dependent spouse in a long-term marriage to find work? There might be. I don't have any statistics on that. But this concept that permanent alimony is common is just completely untrue. And I say that from a lot of experience.
How rare is it, Amy? Can you give us some metrics, a percentage of how many divorces end up with permanent alimony?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the problems that we have with the formulas that Stewart's group wants to impose is that there are no statistics for anything. If you look at New York, if you look at Massachusetts, if you look at California, before they even consider putting these formulas into place, they have task forces who go into the particular statistics of their own state to determine what's best for their state. Is it a formula? Is it not a formula? And if it's a formula, what should the formula be? In fact, New York just finished a very extensive investigation of its own alimony, outcomes, just completed it May 15th of 2013. And if you look at the report, you see that they looked at all these different variables.
You know what, Amy, let me stop you right there, mm-hmm. because we have to take a break in just a few seconds. But we are talking about alimony law, particularly in New Jersey, and how some are saying it's time to rethink the way we do it. We would love to hear your thoughts when we come right back.
The Mann Center supports WHYY and presents Michael Feinstein and Tony Award winners Christine Ebersole and Betty Buckley in an evening of Broadway and the American Songbook's greatest hits, Friday, August 2nd. A night with the ambassador of the American Songbook and two Broadway legends that the whole family can enjoy. Tickets for Michael Feinstein and Friends, Friday, August 2nd, and All Mann Concerts are available at 215-893-1999 or manncenter.org.
You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Rock and roll maverick or country outlaw, however you describe Johnny Cash, he's undoubtedly one of the giants of American music.
45 years later, his 1968 release, At Folsom Prison, deserves a deeper look. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot, and this week on Sound Opinions, Jim and I conduct a classic album dissection of Cash's legendary recording, At Folsom Prison.
tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moskowain. We are talking alimony, specifically permanent alimony, and the efforts to abolish it in New Jersey. The Garden State is one of a handful of states in which permanent alimony can still be granted, even if the marriage itself didn't last very long. And joining us to talk about the pros and cons of alimony reform are Amy Goldstein. Amy is chair of the Family Law Department at the New Jersey law firm of Capehart Scatchard. And we are also talking with Stuart Kurtz, who is a member of the core group of New Jersey Alimony Reform. Welcome back to both of you. I want to welcome our listeners into our conversation as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Perhaps you are in that situation, you are paying permanent alimony, or you've got some thoughts or questions or comments for our guests. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. And when we left off, Amy Goldstein, you were in the middle of a thought. I'd love for you to finish that thought before we go on.
Yeah, the point I was making, Tracy, very simply is that statistics are very important before formulas are imposed, because every state that's looked at this issue has come up with different formulas for their particular state. And we are sorely lacking in recent statistics about how many cases have ended up in permanent alimony, how many cases have ended up with limited duration alimony, what are those durations, what amounts are being awarded based on what incomes. Those are the kind of statistics that I'm talking about that you really need before you can just impose a formula. The formula that's in the current bill in New Jersey is just a copy of the Massachusetts formula. They just took the Massachusetts formula and put it into a New Jersey bill, and that's inappropriate.
Stuart?
Well, speaking of the Massachusetts bill, actually it's based on the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers study, which was done in 2000, they did a report in 2007. And I just want to point out that the New Jersey proposed guidelines and percentages are basically identical to the AAML study. And Amy, of course, you were part of the AAML, and I just wonder how you reconcile from the AAML study and the fact that, and I'll give you a copy of this if you
like. I have
it,
thank you.
How you reconcile from the AAML study, which clearly indicated and also explained in narrative why guidelines were necessary.
I can actually, Tracy, and I would like to address that issue. On April 21st, 2013, Stuart wrote to the president of the National American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers about this report, and his name is Alton Abramowitz. And Mr. Abramowitz wrote back to Mr. Kurtz in two emails and made it very clear to him that the report to which he is referring is by no means the position of the Academy or the policy of the Academy. It was the result of one committee that took a look at formulas and in 2007, which is, of course, 5 years ago. There is now currently another committee of the National Academy that is working on this issue and may not come up with a recommendation of formulas. So Mr. Kurtz knows that the Academy study is really not relevant to this conversation.
I would disagree with that. I would disagree with that about 100,000%. The fact of the matter is yes, you're right. I did have that exchange with Mr. Abramowitz, and that is exactly what he said. However, the thing of it is that it is very relevant. 2007 is very recent, and Mr. Abramowitz said was, and correct, he said, it is a report, it is not a recommendation. I would remind you that report was adopted by the Board of Governors of the AAML, and that it was adopted into the principles of the American Law System, or at the American Law Institute, right after that.
Actually, that's not true either. The American Law Institute guidelines are based on a completely different concept. The ALI principles are based on the concept that a spouse who gave up a career who had a career interruption lost income as a result of the career interruption, and that they should be compensated for that factor alone. That's a completely different concept than the Academy even thought about. It's a completely different concept than the bill in New Jersey, and it's a completely different concept than what the states are looking at.
Well, let's do this, because we don't want to have a divorce in the studio. Hate when that happens. But let's talk a little bit about what lawmakers are looking at in New Jersey, because they're talking about imposing some guidelines about, you know, how long should this last? How much money are we talking about? Amy, let me ask you two things. One, do you think that there should be some guidelines imposed, that perhaps it is time to at least take another look at permanent alimony, and then give us a sense of what it is that lawmakers want to change about the law as it stands.
Well, I do think New Jersey has a history of reviewing its family laws every 10 years to 12 years. We went through revisions in 1987. We went through revisions in 1995. I don't think there's any objection to taking a look at the laws now and deciding whether or not there is discussion to be had about reforming some of them. With respect to the issue of guidelines, I will tell you that there is a lot of discussion among the family bar about it. There are disagreements about it. I personally think that what we're battling with here, and this may be somewhere where Stuart and I actually agree, is we're battling the need for predictability for people with the need for judges and lawyers to be able to look at each fact in its own circumstances. It's a very hard line to walk. And lawyers would like more predictability also. When I'm sitting with a client and a client asks me, well, what's my alimony going to look like? Mm-hmm. And this is a payor or a payee. It's hard for me not to be able to give them a more definitive answer. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to be very careful not to sacrifice fairness for predictability. And that's where it becomes difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think there are ways to do this. There are other states that are looking at it. I think that the issue that we as a bar have is that the people that are driving the reform don't go to court every day like we do. They don't try these cases. They don't have the experience with judges that we have. And they're putting forth misconceptions, such as the one that we started with today, that are only skewing the discussion and leading to a lot of bias that is really honestly getting in the way of looking at these laws in a productive and responsible manner.
Well, we have a number of people who would like to join into our conversation. So what do you say we start off in Havertown and we welcome Vid to our conversation. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hello. Yes, I used to live in Delaware, and in Delaware, the maximum alimony was 20 years. If you were married 20 years or under, was half of the marriage. After that, you could get permanent alimony. And my question is, why would you need permanent alimony, especially in a short marriage? If you're out of the job market a long time, that's one thing. But if you're out of the job market for, a relatively short amount of time, you can go back to school while you have this alimony and get a job.
And Vicki, let me apologize. I got your name wrong. I was having trouble seeing things here. But Amy, let me have you respond to Vicki's question.
Vicki's absolutely correct. The laws in the state of New Jersey say that if you're particularly if you're in a short-term marriage, but even if you're in a mid-length marriage, if you have the ability to go back and find work and be self-supporting, then you would not get alimony beyond the point of being able to return to work. So I agree with you.
Stuart, anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, I would just like to say that is true, and that the problem is that in our state, besides the gearing towards permanent alimony, is that our law is based on trying to create a standard of living or sustain a standard of living. And the fact of the matter is, that's as in the words of the editor in chief of the New Jersey Law section or the magazine that they produce quarterly, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to work to use this standard of living. So it's very difficult to do. But I absolutely do agree. And Delaware is not the only place. Kansas has a limit of 121 months. Texas has a limit of 10 years. In New York and Pennsylvania, this plays completely differently. What Amy is describing, the scenario where it's rare in New York and Pennsylvania, our neighboring states, is absolutely true. It is not rare in New Jersey. If it was rare, I wouldn't be here talking to you. And if it was rare, we wouldn't have New Jersey alimony reform and New Jersey women for alimony reform.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, because I was reading that this sort of growing movement for alimony reform has spawned some interesting groups. There's the First Wives Club, there's the Second Wives Club, who have vastly different agendas. And I found that very interesting that, as you pointed out, Stuart, that there are women who are fighting this as well for an entirely different set of reasons.
Maybe not. They also pay. just so you understand, 29% of all marriages, Bureau of Labor Statistics, 29% of all marriages as of 2010, the wife out-earned the husband. And that is up substantially from the paradigm that it used to be.
Yeah.
More women are graduating law school than men right now. It's an article that I saw recently. It's just a completely different paradigm. Permanent alimony is bedrocked and based on the concept that you married her, you're responsible for taking care of her for the rest of your life, and that's the way it is, and you need to maintain her standard of living. And as Amy said, the world has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Our economy has changed a lot. You can't expect that. People are transient now, more fluid. Their careers are more fluid now. Yeah. It's an impossible standard to uphold. Our problem is that Amy's talked about doing another study. They did a study in New Jersey in 1995, and the commission flat out said, the quote that I gave you before is what they said, and they decided that it was important to put permanent alimony before limited durational. That's like building a house and having two foundations. Permanent is on top of limited durational. Limited durational never had a chance.
Well, right, which raises the question, if there is a provision for limited durational, why have permanent alimony? If that's already written into the law.
I agree.
Amy, can you...
I think it's really interesting. The first thing I want to point out is that the new bill that's been introduced in New Jersey has a provision for what they call indefinite alimony.
Right.
Indefinite alimony under the new bill is if in a marriage of more than 20 years. There's
right.
no definition in the bill of what is indefinite alimony. I don't know what it means. That's one of the many problems with the bill. I do want to go back to this concept. I don't know what statistics Stewart has to back up a claim that there are some outlandish number of permanent alimony cases that would justify the imposition of these guidelines. Most states have rejected these formulas. Stewart cites Kansas. Kansas has a formula in exactly one county. Not in the state of Kansas. I also would like to point out that Stewart's point about women out-earning men is a really good point in the sense that men are finding it harder to find jobs during the recession, okay? So that men become the payees in this situation, not the payers. Stewart's guidelines may very well hurt these men who can't find full-time right. jobs with benefits now that the tide has turned. I personally belong to what you were called before the Second Wives Club. I'm a second wife. If I were to get divorced, I would be paying permanent alimony or indefinite alimony or whatever you want to call it because I've been married for 30 years. So it's not like I'm a stranger to this personally any more than Stewart is. But I think that this – I don't know where this concept came up that permanent alimony is this huge problem. There are people who are entitled to – I'll call it indefinite alimony if that's what Stewart wants. They're entitled to it. When you've been married for a long period of time, when you're too old to start a career, when your husband has had a career and has been able to move up the ladder and has improved his chances of not only his current income being high, but his future income outpacing your future income. If you have a disabled child, if you have health problems, there are so many reasons why in the right marriage, permanent alimony is appropriate that you cannot, or indefinite alimony is appropriate. You cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. It is not fair, and it's not right to these payees, who include men.
Let's go to the phones quickly, and we'll go to Trenton, New Jersey, and welcome Jeff to our conversation. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that I was married for 16 years, and wound up with 11 years of alimony and a pretty high monthly alimony at that. In order to have the other side agree to 11 years, I had to basically give up everything that I had. Every possible negotiating chip that I had was given up in order to accomplish that. And regardless of the number of permanent alimony cases that are awarded, just the feature of permanent alimony makes the negotiations that much different. That it's the elephant in the room, and it's kind of like every time something was starting to go my way, it was like they'd throw the permanent alimony in my face. And I just felt like without the provision of permanent alimony, my case would have been handled a lot differently.
Stewart, you are nodding your head vigorously.
Well, yes, that's the thing. First of all, I don't know where Amy gets the statistic about 99% of cases settling. Mine did not. But the fact of the matter is that we have two kinds of settlement in the state of New Jersey. One of them is the non-modifiable agreement. One of them is a modifiable agreement. So the fact of the matter is that in a modifiable agreement, in many of these agreements, they're really being done with a shotgun to your head because of the fact that people are concerned if they walk in front of a judge like I did on a 10-year marriage, a mid-length marriage, that they will get hit with permanent alimony. So Jeff's example is a perfect example of this blissful thing about everybody settling and only 1%, which again, it's I don't know where that statistic comes from. But again, that is a perfect example of what happens, yeah. Okay?
Amy, what do you say?
There are a couple of good points made in that conversation. First of all, a 10-year marriage, in my experience, is not a permanent alimony case. Now, Stuart is gesturing to my right. Obviously, there, as I said before, Stuart's case being one of the very few that go to trial, there are obviously things that are missing from this discussion, and I don't want to get into that, but it is virtually unheard of for a 10-year marriage to go to permanent alimony unless there are circumstances that are extraordinary. With a 16-year marriage, which the caller called in about, yes, you are getting closer to a situation where it may be a permanent alimony case. Again, then you look at the age of the parties, the career interruption, the children, the dependency of the children, all those other factors would go into the thought process. And your caller was right. When you're negotiating a case, it is the elephant in the room. And I agree that that is a problem because that becomes the same as any other kind of negotiation. If you have a risk that of going in front of a judge, then you want to go into the back room and say, well, do I want to risk it and go to trial, or do I want to negotiate it and avoid a trial? That's just a question of, are you willing to take the chance or not take the chance? It's no different than any other kind of negotiation in any other kind of a legal case that happens every day in every courtroom in the country. So the fact that people are entitled to permanent alimony should not be lost here because there are other people that feel that it's got to be part of the negotiations. Yes, it's one and the same, and yes, he's making a valid point, but that doesn't mean that you then say, well, therefore we shouldn't have permanent alimony because people don't want to feel pressured because they may have to pay it. That's not valid, and it makes no sense.
Well, we have about 30 seconds until we take a break, but I want to throw out this question and we can pick it up when we come back, and that is this. What's wrong with having some guidelines? Let's say, you know, for marriages that have lasted from, you know, 0 to 5 or 10 years, from 10 to 20 years, you know, and factoring in income and those kinds of things to create some parameters for alimony, whether it should be permanent or not. And my understanding is that that's some of what this bill is getting at, that yep. We're trying to, exactly. To create some parameters around it. So when we come back, let's talk about why that makes sense or not. And again, we'd love to hear from our listeners as well. We're talking about permanent alimony. Should it be abolished in the state of New Jersey? That's what we're talking about on Radio Times when we come right back.
The National Museum of American Jewish History supports WHYY and kicks off its New Dreamers and Doers speaker series with shoe designer Stuart Weitzman and WHYY's innovations reporter Zach Seward, who will discuss the story of the Stuart Weitzman Company, an intergenerational tale of vision, entrepreneurship, and the American spirit. The event takes place at the museum on Wednesday, June 12th at 7 p.m. Program tickets at www.nmajh.org. Seating is limited.
On the next Fresh Air, Alicia Abbott tells us about being the child of a gay father in San Francisco at the dawn of the gay liberation era. There were few gay parents then, and she says gay men found children unsettling.
My presence was reminding people of a world of traditional family structure and responsibility that some people were trying to escape from.
Abbott's memoir is Fairyland. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The strict parenting style described in the book Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother by Amy Chua comes under fire in writer Kim Wong Keltner's first work of nonfiction. Keltner rejects the notion that kids should be scrutinized and pushed to excel to make their elders look good. On the next Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb, we'll hear from Keltner, author of Tiger Babies Strike Back, today at noon here on WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane, and we are talking about alimony. Specifically, we're talking about the state of New Jersey and some efforts that are underway to abolish permanent alimony. Jersey is one of a relative handful of states that still allow permanent alimony, and there are those who are in that situation who say we need to put some parameters around this, some guidelines, and in fact, the legislature is looking at a pair of bills designed to do just that, and very similar to a law that was recently passed in Massachusetts and laws that other states are looking at as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 888-477-9499, and we are talking with a pair of guests. One is Amy Goldstein, and Amy's chair of the Family Law Department at the New Jersey law firm of Capehart Scatchard, and her work there focuses on marital and civil union dissolution, alimony, and other related matters. And Stuart Kurtz is our other guest. He's a member of the core group of New Jersey Alimony Reform. He is also paying permanent alimony after his 10-year marriage. We invite you to join in our conversation. And in fact, before we took the break, we were talking about what's wrong with having some guidelines. And in fact, I'd like to bring in one of our callers because I think that's the question of the moment. So let's go to Egg Harbor, New Jersey, and welcome Michael to Radio Times. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
You know, I really think that we do need some kind of reform. I'm going through a divorce right now, and without really getting into a lot of specifics of it, this is a case that really has no reason to get to trial, and I'm sure that Amy would agree with that. I mean, we're talking about an income of $50,000, one child, 16-year marriage, the type of thing that should be very easy to solve. However, there's some circumstances going on with my spouse's attorney, which is kind of spinning this thing out of control. I think if we had some kind of guidelines in there, instead of giving so much discretion to the judge, it would move this process along more quickly. And, you know, really with all due respect to Amy, she's making her living by going through this process. And without having guidelines and making this process last longer, this is truly just spinning the meter. The fact is, on my income, my spouse's attorney has already priced me out of legal advice. So now I am pro se. Her you know, legal advice is being funded by her brother, who has a lot of who just doesn't like me. So this is like a game, and it really, you know, at some point, if these guidelines were in place, we would at least have a negotiating point to start with. Instead, this is an exercise in vindictiveness. And the last thing that I would add to that is, if you don't want to have guidelines, we have to get away from being a no-fault state. And the reason I say that is because I am the victim of a spouse who had numerous extramarital affairs. Now, the judge says I provided a certain lifestyle. Why is it that I need to maintain my part of the marital contract when she broke her part? I've never heard this, having a one-way contract.
Well, Jeff, thank you for that.
That's my issue.
Yeah, and I appreciate your bringing up those points. So that takes us back to our question, Amy. Why not have some guidelines?
It was a very good call, and I appreciate it, because he is right. Guidelines would be helpful to the lawyers. They'd be helpful to the judges. They'd be helpful to the litigants. They would keep the costs down. He is in a classic situation where he doesn't earn enough to make this a $100,000 divorce case. It does happen sometimes that there is one spouse that can fund that kind of a divorce case and another spouse can't, and it is unfair. So let me just say this. The bill that's been introduced in New Jersey does not accomplish clarity, it does not accomplish simplicity, and it does not accomplish predictability. What it does, if you read the bill carefully, is it makes everything more complicated. And if you want to talk about lining the pockets of the attorneys, you should read the bill, because the bill has so many loopholes that you could drive not only a truck through it, but a really good lawyer through it. Because for every lawyer that comes in and says, "Judge, apply these guidelines," there's going to be an opposing lawyer that takes the exceptions that are in this new bill and says, wait, no, this is a case that is the exceptions apply, not the formula. So while I agree with the caller that there may be a place for guidelines or formulas, what I disagree with is the actual bill that's been introduced in New Jersey, because it does not accomplish that. So to take an example, the bill says that these are going to be the amounts of alimony that the judge is going to impose. Okay, they come up with a way to calculate the dollars. And then it says, but the judges have discretion to change that. And then the bill comes up with years of alimony based upon years of marriage. And then it has a paragraph that says, but the judge can deviate for that. Right. Same thing with retirement. Same thing with cohabitation. With respect to modification, there's a paragraph that says that it can be modified. The amount could be modified. But it doesn't say how it can be modified. So as I said, it is not helpful in the sense of making things clearer, and it's not going to help in these settlement discussions, and it's going to give attorneys more to argue about.
Well, Amy, doesn't it, though, also at least provide some wiggle room? So, yes, we have these guidelines, but to your point, every situation is different. There are always some sort of extenuating factors, so that it sounds like, and I am not an attorney, but it sounds like there are guidelines, but the recognition is built in that there will be some extenuating circumstances. And so that's where we give the judge a little bit of wiggle room to maybe modify some of those guidelines.
Exactly.
This is the line that I was talking about before that we're trying very carefully to walk, which is the line between predictability and the line between looking at all the individual circumstances. And the only thing that I'm saying here that is different from what Stuart is saying, because he's nodding his head, is the manner in which it's being done in New Jersey. The manner in which it's being done in New Jersey is that in 2011, Massachusetts passed its new law. The alimony reform group saw that, took the same formulas, put them into a statute that is unreadable. It is for attorneys. It is going to be give us all, even more work. It is not going to help the litigants, and it hasn't been studied for the state of New Jersey. When New Jersey changed its divorce laws in 1987 and 1995, there was a task force. Now I know there's a lot of opposition to a task force. I'm going to say that right up front. Yep. I did an interview in the Burlington County Times. Every comment that was posted was anti-task force.
Yes.
Okay. Stuart's point earlier was that it took 10 years for the Academy and it'll take 10 years more. That is not the case. New York did it with a task force of 2 years. Massachusetts did it with a task force of 2 years. The bill that's in the legislature in New Jersey right now is for a one-year term limit. That's it. This does not have to be dragged out, but it is not appropriate for us to just say, Massachusetts has it, I want it, and we're just going to take the same formula. And it's based on anecdotal evidence. This push to just take the Massachusetts formula and put it in New Jersey is based on anecdotal evidence that's being garnered by the Alimony Reform Group, which is what I referred to earlier. Tell us your horror stories. And it's not the way that we do things in the state of New Jersey.
Stuart, I'll have you respond to that, and then I want to get back to the phones because we have lots of calls. Go ahead.
Well, actually, the bill itself, first of all, I don't agree with the statement that the bill is as being projected as it is. I think it's a very good bill. I think that the bill takes into account, we've heard a lot about, we need to keep discretion to the judges and everything is on a case-by-case basis. This bill, even though it puts in, as you said, it puts in the guidelines, it allows for deviation. So it's giving you everything you want. It's giving us a place to start with. It's giving us a baseline. Yet all I hear from the family law section is about cookie-cutter approaches. It's not a cookie-cutter approach. That's the point. It's a very good bill. And yes, I just want to make sure, because I've heard a lot about, oh my God, the 24-year marriage, the woman who whatever is stuck.
Sure, right.
They're putting in the word indefinite for a reason, okay? They're putting it in for flexibility, okay? The reason they're removing the word permanent is because the word permanent is just, it does not belong in our lexicon anymore. It just doesn't.
Well, let's go to the phones and see what our listeners have to say. We'll go to Center City, Philadelphia, and welcome Dean to Radio Times. Hi, Dean.
Hi. I was divorced in Burlington County, New Jersey, after 14 years of marriage and 2 years of the lawyers bleeding us dry and the ad litem period. It cost me nearly $500,000. The result is that I am broke, I'm working 3 jobs, and I'm paying $60,000 a year in permanent alimony to a woman who attended an Ivy League school and came out with a degree in computer programming as well as one in elementary education. I feel like I have a life sentence. And to say that we should study this more, there was a bill to study it more, and the family law attorneys forced the proposed group to exclude any alimony reform activists or supporters. So the family law division has been truly self-serving. But even more than that, the harm to people like myself and to other New Jersey people who have gone through a bitter divorce, the permanent alimony is not only unfair, but it perpetuates a division within the family, because there's a division now because there's additional tension that involves the children. And this is separate and completely separate and apart from child support. Not addressing child support.
Yeah. Well, Dean, thank you for that. I appreciate your sharing your story with us, and I want Amy to respond to that, and particularly to the idea of the effects on family, the notion, and certainly this was one of the other arguments that I think Dean's story brings up, that it ties these spouses together for many, many years after they've, in every other way, gone their separate ways, and yet there remains this tie. But if you would respond to Dean's situation and what he's been dealing with.
One of the things I was going to ask if we could find out from Dean is how old he is. I'd be interested to know that, because he's telling you that he's paying permanent alimony. But if you think about it, if Dean is, 56 or 57 years old, let's keep in mind that there is a very good chance the alimony will be modified or terminated within 10 years, which is less time than the limited duration alimony periods in the new bill. This is where people kind of get all caught up in this in the wrong way. So you need to know, once again, you need to know more about the case before we decide whether or not Dean is in a situation that's so unfair. Yeah. If Dean paid that much money in litigation fees, I say this with all due respect, Dean should have found a new lawyer. Because there's no excuse for that. That's an excessively ridiculous amount of money to pay for a litigation. And sometimes it's the clients who are not thinking straight that lead to the attorney's fees being that high. So I can't really speak any more to that issue. I can say to you that as far as people being tied to one another, I don't know why. There are probation departments now. The probation department takes the money out of your check, sends it to the payee. There's no need to be handing a check over. There's no reason to make this a tie unless you make it a tie. I mean, if you tell your kids, I'm really mad, I'm paying your mother alimony, yeah, you've made it a tie. You've made it an issue. And I hear that all the time. If you choose to involve your family, then they're involved. But if you're going to be, good to your family and not drag them into it, then you just don't say those things. You let the check go, you let the probation department do it, and it does not have to be a tie that binds. Hmm.
Stuart?
Well, first of all, that works both ways. In my particular case, that's exactly what happened, is that my ex-wife completely alienated me from my children. She told my son, and this is a quote, "We are destitute because of your father," okay? And she she told him, she said, the reason you don't have the computer you want is because of your father. Okay.
It gets messy.
It gets very messy, and I tried to stay above board as much as I could, but unfortunately, there comes a time where you can. And now I have two children. I have a judge that flat out said that she put an iron curtain between me and my children, and that hurts. Yeah. That curtain hurts.
Let me ask both of you, as we just wrap up the program here, because we only have another moment or so, what's the takeaway from this for couples in New Jersey, engaged couples as well, who are watching all of this unfold? And very briefly, I'd like to ask each of you what you think the takeaway is from this effort to abolish permanent alimony and where things may end up going. Amy, what do you say?
With respect to the latter part, I don't have any problem with changing the word permanent alimony to changing the word to indefinite alimony. That's what the reformers want to do. I honestly don't see the difference. I do really hope that the takeaway that people get from this conversation is that there are cases in which indefinite alimony is justified, and that there are cases when it's not justified. And I do agree that there needs to be further clarification of when is it justified versus when is it not justified. I just feel that the people that are driving this don't have the necessary background, experience, or competence to do this fairly to both sides. I just want to read one posting from one of the leaders of the New Jersey Alimony Reform Organization.
And it'll have to be very quick, okay, because we've got just a few seconds.
Okay. I'll just read the end of it. This is a posting on the internet. Just remember, sucking somebody dry until they die isn't something that you do in the best interests of the children. You do it for yourself because you are a lazy pig. This was in response to the new bill when it was introduced. And those are the people that are driving this, and that is wrong.
No.
Stuart, should engaged couples think about a prenup in light of all of this?
Well, I think they should, not only a prenup, I think they should consider moving someplace else. I wouldn't get married in this state knowing now what I knew then. I love my wife. She's the greatest thing on earth. But I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't in the first place have married here. The laws here are oppressive, and we don't need a study to see how oppressive they are. That's why we're here.
Well, let me thank both of you for being with us. Amy Goldstein, Stuart Kurtz, thank you for helping us to explore some of the nuances and the intricacies of what's going on in New Jersey as it relates to alimony law. I'm Tracy Matisak, and you have been listening to Radio Times on WHYY.